Welcome to the Digital Identity Digest, the audio companion to the blog at Spherical Cow Consulting. I'm Heather Flanagan, and every week I break down interesting topics in the field of digital identity, from credentials and standards to browser weirdness and policy twists. If you work with digital identity but don't have time to follow every specification or hype cycle, you're in the right place. Let's get into it. Hi, and welcome back. I'm recording this episode while dealing with the cold that everyone seems to have right now. So sorry for it being a little bit late. I'd rather hope the cold would be resolved before I had to pick up the microphone again. But here we are, and I'm going to talk to you about critical infrastructure. So a friend of mine sent over an article by a person named Ross Havlicek that began with an interesting line. It was, why it's not just power, grid, and water, but also tools like Stripe and Twilio that should be defined as critical infrastructure. His point is that some services have become so essential that when they fail, the impact cascades far beyond the core company. And the AWS outage in October was kind of proof of that. So before we go further, though, it's worth defining the term. Critical infrastructure refers to the systems and assets that are so vital that their disruption would seriously harm national security, the economy, or public safety. Now, the exact list and the exact definition varies a bit from one jurisdiction to the next. In the U.S., for example, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA, identifies 16 sectors, including energy, water, transportation, and communications, as part of this country's critical infrastructure. Other countries use different definitions. Regardless, the underlying idea is the same. Protect what society can't function without and do it with government backing. The challenge, as Havlicek and others point out, is that the list of what is critical kind of keeps expanding. So on October 19th, 2025, AWS went down in one big region, and this time it was basically a database error for something that fed the DNS. Payments failed at that point, authentication broke, delivery systems froze, and for a few hours, the digital economy looked a lot less digital. Now, from my perspective, you know, strangest things failed. So I was boarding a plane to go to the Internet Identity Workshop when the outage was happening, basically. Air traffic control was fine, thank you, archaic systems, but the gate agent couldn't check bags, right? The purser couldn't see what catering was loaded. And my seatmate was like absolutely freaking out about whether it was even safe to fly. And so many things broke. A lot of things didn't. But what stood out was how few people could actually tell the difference between what mattered and what didn't. And, you know, just how important things were or not. It made something really clear to me, which is that modern resilience is really fragile because we built on a world of invisible dependencies that aren't recognized. So modern businesses, right, they run on other people's APIs, which includes things like the model context protocol and all the AI work and everything. That's all someone else's computers. Stripe, you know, it's handling payments. Twilio is delivering authentication codes and customer messages. Okta's providing identity. AWS, Google Cloud, Azure hosts all the things. Right. These are no longer niche conveniences, right? They form the infrastructure of a lot of global commerce. When you tap your phone to pay for coffee or when a government portal confirms your tax filing, one of these services was probably working in the background. And they don't look like traditional critical infrastructure. There are no visible grids or physical pipes per se. They exist as code, as data centers, and as contracts. But functionally, they behave like utilities. So we've replaced public infrastructure with private platforms. And this shift has brought some really incredible innovation, but it's also bringing some new kinds of risk. Infrastructure used to be something we built up and maintained. Now it's something we subscribe to and assume will always work. So we stopped building things to last in the digital landscape and started building things to scale, leveraging someone else's efficiencies. But our assumptions about resilience haven't quite caught up with what that really means, I don't think. And part of that's because there's a paradox here. There's a whole set of paradoxes here. Cloud architectures, for example, are supposed to be resilient. They're redundant, they're distributed, they're fault tolerant. But that resilience in one layer creates fragility in another. Now, in the blog series that started with the end of the global internet, I talked about how designing for resilience makes sense in a fragmenting world. Companies build multi-region backups and hybrid clouds to insulate themselves from geopolitical risk or human error. But those same design choices, the duplicating systems, the isolating risk, can actually, in some cases, increase fragility overall. Your microservices make like each component stronger, but the entire ecosystem is more brittle. Every layer adds redundancy, but it's also adding another point of failure. The service might survive the loss of one data center, but not the failure of a shared DNS resolver or an authentication API. Now, the AWS outage made all of this pretty visible. A system that was built for reliability failed because its dependencies were too successful. Now, interdependence kind of cuts both ways. When everyone's relying on that same safety net because they're using all of these shared services, when it goes down for one person, it goes down for everybody. So here's the question. Should services like AWS or Stripe or whatnot be treated as critical infrastructure? Now, Hauweck argues yes. I am not entirely convinced. I can see reasons for it. I can see reasons against it. Now, in the U.S., the FTC and the FCC have been fighting for decades over whether the internet itself qualifies as critical infrastructure. Supporters say broadband is essential to modern life. Opponents say that the label would invite regulation, and that's considered bad for innovation. Declaring something critical brings oversight. It brings compliance requirements and coordination mandates. Avoiding that label preserves flexibility and profit margins, but leaves society vulnerable. So we end up with this uneasy middle ground of systems that operate as infrastructure but remain governed by private interests, whose reach therefore kind of exceeds their obligations. What they impact goes beyond what their contracts cover. Now, in traditional utilities, a lot of physical constraints keep monopoly power in check. With software, scale is the constraint, right? Success creates dominance, and dominance actually kind of discourages competition because only a few can afford to be too big to fail, and everyone else tends to depend on them. When your business continuity plan depends on someone else's business continuity plan, your governance is really more an act of faith than anything else. Now, outside the U.S., the debate takes a slightly different shape under the banner of Digital Public Infrastructure, or DPI. Governments across the G20 are asking whether national payment systems, digital identity programs, and data exchange platforms should be classified not just as DPI, but as Critical Information Infrastructure, or CII. So a recent G20 policy brief put it pretty well, that DPI and CII serves public purposes, but they're built on opposing instincts. DPI emphasizes openness and inclusion. CII emphasizes restriction and control. So India's Unified Payment Interface, or UPI, is a really good example. It isn't officially labeled as critical infrastructure, but it functions like it. Its success has raised all sorts of interesting trust and security expectations, but also concerns about who gets to access it? What about foreign participants? How do you handle cross-border interoperability? Now, the G20 recommended identifying these kinds of systems as critical early on before they grow too big to retrofit with proper governance, which is an approach that has its own trade-offs. Recognizing something as critical invites oversight, and oversight can stifle the innovation that made the thing successful in the first place. And that same kind of tension, the security versus availability, runs through every design decision a company makes. When regulation is unclear, incentives take over. And the biggest incentive of all is uptime. Availability becomes that currency of trust. Downtime will bring backlash, it'll bring lost revenue, penalties. And so companies optimize for continuity above all else. Things like security become secondary, which I don't particularly like that, but I understand it. Availability is going to win because it is visible. Customers will notice an outage instantly, but they rarely notice an insecure configuration or a policy failure until something goes horribly wrong. So that visibility gap really distorts your priorities. And when reliability is measured by uptime alone, that risk is kind of festering out of sight. You can't meaningfully secure what you don't control, But most organizations depend on the illusion that accountability can be outsourced while reliability remains intact. Incentives are rewarding continuity, not transparency. Revenue flows as long as the service runs, even if it runs insecurely. So until we include societal resilience in our definition of is it working or not, we're going to keep mistaking uptime for true and complete stability and hope that security comes along with it. So all of that probably sounds like a really strong argument for regulation. But, you know, in a way, dependency itself already acts as a kind of regulation because society treats many tech platforms as critical infrastructure without saying so. Governments hosting their services on AWS, hospitals relying on commercial clouds for patient records. We trust these companies and governments. We trust all of this, not because AWS or Google or, you know, Microsoft, they're not obligated to serve the public interest. We kind of don't have an alternative than to trust them. And that's the logic of too big to fail, kind of written for the digital age. We've built a layer of infrastructure that's privately owned, but publicly indispensable. And it's running on trust, not oversight, which is kind of a fragile foundation for a system this essential. So dependence isn't just about trust. It's also about design. We call systems infrastructure that are built on platforms that look competitive but converge around the same few providers, right? If you ask a CIO if their organization could migrate off a major cloud provider, most will say yes. You say, could you do it today? The answer is no. APIs and proprietary integrations make switching possible but painful, and that pain enforces dependence. It's not malicious, it's just market gravity. And lock-in is your sort of tax on convenience. When a platform failure can delay paychecks or starve people on flights or disrupt hospital systems, this isn't about price or preference. It's about public safety. The modular, composable internet we celebrate has become pretty brittle and aggregate. I mean, we've built dependency chains and called them innovation, and they are. But it's such a fragile system to count on. Now, as society's become more technologically complex, the concept of critical infrastructure, it does in its way keep expanding. Power, water, and transportation defined your baseline, but then came telecommunications, the internet, and now we're talking authentication, payments, messaging, identity services. Each layer improves capability. You can do more and more things, but it multiplies your exposure. Every dependency adds another surface for failure. So the question kind of isn't whether these systems are critical, because they clearly are. The question is how to handle the responsibilities that come with that recognition and whether you want to make the critical infrastructure label the thing that you're going to stick to all of this. I mean, calling an API a utility, you're calling it critical, doesn't have to be about nationalizing it. It is about acknowledging that the private infrastructure is performing public functions and that with that recognition comes responsibility. Every new addition to the critical list, however, kind of spreads oversight thinner. If everything's a priority, nothing truly is, right? The resources are finite, attention is finite. So I think we really have to decide which dependencies deserve protection and which risks we can tolerate. Ross Haulwick's observation wasn't just a commentary, right? It is a mirror to what the debates that are happening in society today. Stripe, AWS, others, they don't merely enable business. They kind of are business. They become the unacknowledged utilities of a digital economy. So when I watched my airline's systems falter during the AWS outage, you know, it kind of wasn't just an airline glitch. It was like a really interesting glimpse into just how deeply interwoven our dependencies have become. If your goal is to be efficient, then labeling these systems as critical infrastructure might be the right path. You know, there will be some really interesting regulations to keep things stable. I would also point out that those kinds of things are why some hospital systems and some defense systems still use Internet Explorer, because they are critical. And so you can't just modernize them. Heavens forfend the day. If resilience is your goal, then maybe you need some different choices where you can figure out how you're going to do your innovation and actually be a little bit more effective in failing over and being flexible. the next outage is going to happen. It's not going to be an exception, but it is going to remind us that the foundations of the modern world are built on rented infrastructure. And we're going to have to pay the bill for that. With that, thank you very much. Thank you for your time today. I hope this gave you something to think about. And I look forward to recording the next episode. And that's it for this week's episode of the Digital Identity Digest. If it helps make things a little clearer, or at least a little more interesting, share it with a friend or colleague and connect with me on LinkedIn at HL Flanagan. And if you enjoyed the show, do be sure to subscribe and leave me a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find the written full post at sphericalcowconsulting.com. Now stay curious, stay engaged, and let's get these conversations going.